Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Hi, this is Mitch Spean over at the studios here at KXXT. Today is the first Tuesday of the month. That means it's the bottom line. Dave will not be joining us today, but we do have a wonderful guest, Nick the Computer Guy. Welcome.
Hi, Mitch. Nick, glad to be here.
Well, we're looking forward to having a discussion, and what we're going to do today is talk a little bit about computers and what our audience and people in business can do to make sure that everything is safe, secure, and the best way to do that is to get good advice, and one of those is to talk to Nick. Now, I did notice, we'll start off with one of the things that you were mentioning before. We only have Nick, no last name.
Well, Mitch, I lost my last name, actually. I started with one a few years back during the height of the baby boom. My parents gave me a first name and a last name, and my middle name was Nick. That presented a challenge because whenever somebody in the authority would ask my for my name, I would have to explain Robert is my first name, but I go by my middle name, Nick. And the other thing that was really kind of odd and I still find a little perplexing to this date is that my last name, which is Knight, people invariably wanted to drop the K. So it evolved to sort of Knight with a K as being my last name. And for the particularly slow, I would add, as in armor. So when I formed my business, I basically decided to drop the Knight altogether and just make it Nick the Computer Guy.
Well, it sounds like the issues that I have kind of in reverse with my last name. Spean being the last name, but they like to add L's. So L's spleen. So I've always said that it's a Christmas spleen, you know, Noel. And so I know, I understand exactly where you're coming from. We just try and make sure that they get the information eventually correct. And we go from there. Now, tell our audience a little bit about yourself. Give them some background on who is Nick.
Well, if somebody had asked me about the time I was matriculating from high school, if somebody had suggested that I would end up being on intimate terms with the innards of a computer, I probably would have looked at them very quizzically and inquired as to what a variety of non-prescription elements they were consuming, because I was a fine arts major. I went to college for film and communications. So computers were the last thing on my mind.
Oh, so what was your favorite movie then?
My favorite movie, to this day, remains the original Sleuth with Michael Caine and Sir Laurence Olivier.
I like that one, too. Of course, I've been watching an awful lot of movies recently, mostly the older ones that have come out, and started watching The Adventures of Robin Hood the other day with Olivia de Havilland and Errol Flynn. So it's just kind of fun to put those onto your computer and just watch them. But, you know, the main reason we're here to talk is about the computers. And one of the biggest things that I've found to be a concern, at least from my standpoint for my clients, is security.
And rightly so. According to statistics that are researched by people whose job it is to find that information, there are more than 300 new viruses that appear in the wild each and every month. So if you're surfing the internet without security, then you are leaving yourself wide open to a variety of things which will end up at the very least costing you time and money, if not all your data.
Well, what are some of the suggestions that you have as far as making sure that you don't have those kind of problems?
There are a variety of security solutions available. Unfortunately, the major players, I think, do their best to discourage people through what I call the amazing renewal ripoff. The way this works is very simple. You have your major internet providers that everybody is familiar with. They usually come with a trial version with a new computer, 60 to 90 days of service protection. And then you're offered the opportunity to renew for only $40, $50, $60 a year. This is where I have an issue. The fact that you need security is indisputable, but you don't need to pay $40 to $60 a year for it. First of all, the major companies that sell products at retail, when you go out to a store to buy the retail product or online, they're very, very competitive at pricing. Typically, I will buy a 3-computer license for a major security program for my clients for about $12 to $15. That's, what, $5 a year per computer? Instead of the $60 a year renewal. So if you get those nasty renewal notices, take a look at what's out there on the retail market. You can usually find the product for a fraction of the renewal. You simply reinstall it over the product, and you're good for another year. Another option, if you subscribe to high-speed internet service, most providers offer an internet security package free of charge to their subscribers. You simply have to log on to your website and follow the directions to download and install it. Another option. Third option is that there are a lot of very good free security programs available whose detection rates are comparable to those of the major players, and yet for home users, there's no charge at all. Some of those include AVG, Avast, and Avira Antivirus. Those three rank typically at 90% or above detection rates, so the protection levels are the same or better than some of the retail products. The one nice thing about some of the free products is that they don't take up as much memory or system resources as these full-blown internet security packages that have everything in the kitchen sink, so, which means that they don't slow your computer down as much.
Well, and I think that the other part of it is once you get that free version, they're always asking you about upgrades.
Some of them to a greater or less degree. The ones I prefer tend to they will offer to upgrade you for a price when you first install them, but most of them keep out of the way once you decide to choose the free version. The only requirement is you simply have to register with your email address.
Yeah. What's the advantage of getting a free versus the other than the price? If they are going to be comparable for use, how do the where do they get paid? I mean, how do they make their money? Because unless they're being funded by some outside source, it's not really profitable.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that. Part of the way they do that is that the free products are offered only for personal use. So if you want to use them in a business, you do need to pay for them. Most of them don't have any real way of checking that, but so that you're on your honor there. But their product, basically, they provide the free product. Product is a way to entice you to try, if you're satisfied with that, to move on up to their full product that includes additional features.
Okay. Well, that helps a lot. I think that a lot of people, when they talk about their computers, they're looking at this security and saying, well, I've got a PC and I've got a laptop. And a lot of times I know that when you buy software, you get this one license. But what I've heard is if you've got multiple computers like that, but you're only using one at a time, you can actually install it on both and it's not going to be a problem.
That depends entirely on the specific license agreement for each software. And even amongst a given software package, for instance, let's take Microsoft Office as an example. There are several different flavors of Microsoft Office, ranging from the home and student version, which may offer licensing for up to three computers, to Office Professional, which offers licensing for two computers, one user, which means you can have it on your desktop and on your laptop. So it's entirely dependent on the particular licensing agreement that is supplied with each package of software, which 99% of people never read.
You don't have a choice, as far as I can tell. Either you accept or you don't have the software. So if you want the software, reading through 20 pages just to say yes, how much are you really going to spend to say, there's this one paragraph that I have a question on, and even if you do call, what kind of response are you going to get anyway?
Well, you know, you raise an interesting point, but in a different context, because that whole concept of having these massive license and terms of use agreements is how a lot of malware is foisted upon your computer. Malware is basically, this may come with a free piece of software that sounds like it's just absolutely fantastic, and you scroll through the terms of the use and don't read it, and click on, yeah, okay, sure, good for me. And what you've just signed is your permission for them to monitor your computer usage and periodically send reports back to their servers so they can target advertising to you. So that's a way that somewhat less reputable companies use these massive legalese licensing documents to put stuff on your computer you don't necessarily want. In the case of legitimate companies like Microsoft or Adobe, no, their licensing agreements are clean in that regard. Although some of the things you find in there, if you actually take your time to read, would give you pause.
Do you have any examples of those?
I don't off the top of my head.
All right. I want to go on to another area that I think is really important to our listeners, and that is backing up data. We've been talking a little bit about security, but as part of that, I think backing up is vital. How much do you need to do as far as backing up to make sure that you're not in trouble? And I'm sure that varies by the type of business you're in and what type of computer, but tell me a little bit about some of the things that you recommend as far as backups.
Well, I'll pose a couple of questions to you first, okay? And this will kind of serve to point out the need to back up. First question is, which do you spend more time behind the wheel of, your car or your computer?
Oh, it's the computer. There's no question.
Second question is,
of course, not recently. My kids have been keeping me going all over the place recently, but basically it's the computer.
Second question, if one of them unexpectedly died without any warning or had an accident, which would have a greater impact on your business, computer or car?
Absolutely the computer.
So, third question is, which one do you take into the shop every 3 months for an oil change?
Okay, I use synthetic. It's every 6 months. But, oh, absolutely. You take care of that car like it's your baby.
You take care of the car so it'll last.
Right.
Computers are no different. And backing up is part of that overall computer care strategy. If tomorrow you turned on your computer and looked at a blank screen and you didn't have any lights, no hard drive worrying up.
Or even blue.
Yeah. You would be, at that point, approaching panic mode. So the reason for backup is not only peace of mind, but to enable you to recover in the quickest possible way from the worst possible disaster. There are a variety of different approaches to backing up. It's not, it's changed a lot in recent years, but the basic fundamental is simply that you want to be able to restore your data. If you have a hard drive failure or a complete computer meltdown, You want to be able to get your data back intact as most recently as possible, as quickly as possible. And for that, there's a couple of different approaches. One of the approaches that is becoming used more and more widely is what's called disk imaging. And what this does is it essentially takes a snapshot of the entire drive or hard disk and puts it on an external drive. This will enable... This enables you basically, it restores everything. Your operating system, your programs, and your data. So if you had a massive failure, you would simply put the new hard drive in, run a floppy disk to bring up the drive imaging program, and restore that drive image back to your hard disk, and you would be off and running again like it never happened.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it. I want to talk about a couple things about outsourcing when we come back. It's The Bottom Line with Mitch Steen, with our guest, Nick the Computer Guy.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911? The firemen don't know what to do, the truck's got a flat tire, the water hose has a leak, they can't decide what to wear, and everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process, they follow it, they're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hi, welcome back. It's The Bottom Line with Mitch Steen. Dave Isaac will be back with us next week, and you might actually hear him later on in the week. In the meantime, I'm here with Nick the Computer Guy. We've been talking about backing up data, and you had a couple other suggestions for people as far as backups, because I know that one of the things that I was thinking about was the different types of backups. You can do outsourcing and other things like that. So why don't you give a few examples of the type of things that we can do.
All right. We were talking about drive imaging, and a program that is a wonderful program for that is called Paragon Backup and Recovery. It's a free program, and not only will it create a drive image, but you can also schedule regular backups with it as well. So it's pretty much a complete backup solution. But some of the other options you want to think about, and especially for my business clients that are basically have mission-critical data on their servers, I usually recommend a multi-stage approach to the backup. I will have them back up their data daily to an external hard drive that's on-site. Usually have run two or three different hard drives, and they exchange them out every night. So there's one, your previous day's backup is always off-site. But the other thing I do utilize online backups, which are becoming increasingly popular and very affordable. Basically, what this does is it, through a program that is provided by the vendor, you're backing up your data over the internet to a secure location. The data is encrypted, so it's protected. You can't access it. And this gives you that extra measure of security in the event of some catastrophic event that you cannot use your local backups. You have other backups off-site. So there are that's a really, really good option. And as I said, it's become very affordable now for even the home user. There's a program called iDrive, which offers you at the beginning, I believe it's 2 gigabits of free backup space. They include their own software. You install it. It works seamlessly. It does it. If you want more space, simply provide referrals to 5 of your friends. They don't have to sign up, but you get 15 gig of data free, online data storage backup. So those are a couple of the options. So backup is something that, to work best, you shouldn't have to think about. Once it's installed, it should run all the time without your intervention unless you have to recover.
I think that's very important for people to realize that, you know, just having it on a computer means that, and then printing it out maybe gives you an extra way of doing it. But I also know that there's, in addition to the regular backups and taking it off-site, which essentially the online backups do, it's basically keeping it off-site. You could also take those hard drives and take those off-site as well. And that just gives you that extra measure of protection, because if you have them at your house, for instance, and there's a problem at the house, you've lost the backup and whatever's on the computer at the same time. So having it in separate locations is something that I think is really important.
Absolutely. That's been a cornerstone of backup strategies going as far back as people have been running servers. Even when it was when you were primarily backing up to tapes, the ideal backups strategy was always that tape came out in the morning after the evening's backup. That tape went home with somebody at night. So there was always a backup off-site. And the addition of, obviously, our backup needs have increased with the size of our hard drives, so we're using external drives rather than tapes now. But the addition of having that online off-site backup further reinforces the idea that your backups really need to be in a place other than where the computer is.
Right. Now, I also know that there's mirroring or ghosting on computers as well. I've always had a question regarding that. If you've got a mirror drive and the computer has a problem, my understanding is that the other side of this mirror will take over, but you've still got a problem with the one side of things. How do you identify when something's gone wrong? Because if it's just seamlessly going over to the mirrored side, how would you know that there's a problem? And then you're starting to back up bad data.
Well, if the way mirroring works is either it's run through a software or a hardware controller that creates the mirror and runs that process. Okay, as a part of that controlling hardware or software is a drive monitoring function. So if it sees that you have a hard drive going bad, it will tell you. It will give you a notice. Most hard drives today have built-in self-monitoring firmware built into the electronics of the hard drive. This is the abbreviation is SMART, S-M-A-R-T, which stands for Smart Monitoring and Reporting Technology. And what this does is it gives you kind of an early warning of an impending hard drive failure. So, for instance, if a client calls me up and says, hey, Nick, I got this message on my screen saying Smart has detected an impending problem with your hard drive. What should I do? First thing I say is, okay, shut your computer down. Don't use it. This message is telling you that your hard drive is getting ready to fail. It hasn't failed yet. If I can get the hold of the hard drive before it fails, I can clone it onto a new computer, onto a new hard drive, and that's the easiest way to replace it. It's the least expensive, the least time-consuming, and you don't have to reload all your programs.
Again, we're back to the safeguarding your data, which, again, every business, if the way we rely on computers these days is the heart and soul, like you said with your questions. It's basically the heart and soul of your business.
The thing about mirroring, though, that you have to understand is mirroring takes place internal to the computer with one or more drives. So mirroring is not will only protect you from a failed hard drive. If there's a fire in your office and everything burns up, mirroring's not going to help. That's why you need the offsite.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a multi-level security system, essentially, is what you're saying they need. You've got the backups on-site, off-site, and within the system as well, in order to make sure that you've got the data properly handled throughout the system.
Exactly. The thing I emphasize to my clients is the most important thing on your computer is your data. You can buy new hardware. You can buy new applications and replace them, reinstall them, whatever you need to do. But your data is your company lifeblood, and if you lose that, then you do have a serious problem.
Absolutely. Now, I've seen companies as they've grown, they kind of add to their systems. For instance, I used 3 monitors, and as we grow that size, the hard drives are getting bigger. Doesn't that give more of a chance as we're now getting into terabytes to have more failures on the hard drives?
Not necessarily. Hard drives, as a general rule, are pretty reliable. And again, going back to the new technology, the self-monitoring technology, all modern hard drives, in most cases, will give you a little advance warning of failure so you can take the appropriate measures. But it's simply because they're bigger doesn't mean they're more prone to failure.
Okay, that's good to know. Listen, one of the things that I know that because of all this technology and knowing a little bit about your business is that there are several ways that you can work with a client. You don't have to necessarily be in front of them the entire time. You can get onto their computer remotely. There's VPN connections. There's other types of ways of getting onto the computer. What are the secure ways of first dealing with that type of security in trying to use your computer from offsite locations, and then how you use that technology to better serve your clients?
The ability to work remotely on a computer has been around for quite a few years. It's become more refined, more secure, and easier to implement, especially during the last 3 to 5 years. And it all basically hinges around the concept of establishing a secure connection from one computer over the internet to another computer. This used to be done a lot through virtual private networking. It is being done more and more frequently now through secure web connection, which occasionally, for instance, if you go to a banking website, you will see that the initial part of the address, instead of just saying HTTP, says HTTPS. That means it's a secured site, and you usually have a little icon at your browser, a lock or something like that, to show you're on a secured site. Most of the remote software now utilizes this type of approach to provide a secure connection between computers over the internet. There are several different options. This has really revolutionized the ability of IT technologists to provide service to a greater number of clients than they might be able to if they had to physically visit each site for every problem. Now, as long as your computer can connect to the internet, I can work on your computer remotely and help you solve problems remotely rather than have you try to describe what's going on and me asking you questions. It takes a long time to go through that process where if I can see your screen remotely, a lot of times I will see things that you wouldn't even think to mention just because to me they stand out as being abnormal. And so the whole concept of remote control of computers has just made my job much easier in many regards. I structure my pricing accordingly, so remote service calls are less than on-site calls. but I can work on a computer remotely. There are several programs I use. If I'm just going to be connecting for a single session, I will use a program called CrossLoop or Show My PC. This provides a secure one-session connection where the host user, the software generates a password. The host user reads that password back to me. I enter it on my side, and because I have the password, it will allow me to connect. Once I'm finished and they close their remote software, that password's over, gone, and done with. Nobody else can get into their computer using that password or any other unless they start a new session and generate a new password. So it's secure for the user and enables me to help them remotely. For other situations where I need ongoing access to a computer on a regular basis, example, company servers, most server maintenance needs to be done ideally off hours, so it's not impacting the business. By using remote software such as LogMeIn, I can log into a computer at any time of the day or night. It's set up so that it's connected to an online account that I have, and then I can log in at 10, 11 o'clock at night when the office is closed, do the maintenance on the server, and they walk in the next morning, and they don't know the difference, but I've applied the updates and security patches that need to be applied, rebooted the server, not impacted anybody in the process. So it's really improved the way we can provide service to our clients.
Well, certainly makes sense to me. And we will be back in just a minute with The Bottom Line with Mitch Spean, and we'll talk more about computers with Nick the Computer Guy.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
At Beerum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And we're back. This is The Bottom Line with Mitch Spean, and we're talking with Nick the Computer Guy. Well, as we were talking before, we were talking a little bit about backups, but you had mentioned, as you were saying, you were doing some maintenance on these other computers, that you were applying patches and doing other types of maintenance. And we had talked early on about taking care of your car and how important it is to take care of your computer as well. Can you give me some of the examples of things that you do to make sure that your computer is well-maintained?
I certainly can. It's a pretty common experience. You buy your new computer, take it out of the box, fire it up, and it's just blazing fast. Everything pops up faster than you can blink. As you use it, for some strange reason, it seems to get progressively slower, and you're so down the line, it's like, you know, it just, I must need a new computer. This one just isn't running the way it used to. The reason it's not running the way it used to is because computers, just like cars, need some basic maintenance. Part of that is usually included in the operating system with the periodic patches that Microsoft and other vendors supply. These provide not only they fix bugs that have been discovered after the software was released, they also provide enhancements, but most importantly, they fix security holes that are discovered after software is released. They apply patches that correct trapdoors or holes that people have discovered and exploited, and then it's up to the manufacturers to go back and figure out how to fix them, and that's what all the Windows updates are about, a lot of those. The other things that you can do to help keep your computer running properly, they're very, very simple to do. Anyone can do them with the very least amount of computer experience. Windows, since XP, has come with a number of built-in tools to help with that process. The two most often used are called Disk Cleanup and Defragmenter. What these do, Disk Cleanup, first of all, the idea is that it gets rid of junk that accumulates on your computer. For example, you open a document, you work on the document, and maybe something happens and you don't get to close, the program crashes, your computer crashes, you don't get to close the document properly. Well, every time you open a program, it creates temporary files on your computer to use while it's running. The theory is when you close the program normally, it goes and cleans up after itself, gets rid of the temporary files it's created, and you're on your way. It generally works that way pretty well, but it doesn't always work that way. So eventually you accumulate junk stuff that you don't need on your computer. Same thing is true with your internet browsing. Your browser typically will maintain a cache or store of web pages that you visit to enable them to load faster the next time you visit the page and then just update whatever's changed. Over time, though, your browser cache gets really large and starts slowing down your browser, so you need to periodically clear that out. That's some of the main things that are targeted with Disk Cleanup. There's another software program available, free. I like free, as long as it does the job.
And as long as it truly is free, because...
Yes, and we can get into that, the freeware programs that carry with them extra goodies that you don't want. But I try not to use any of those, and the ones I recommend are ones that come clean with just what you ordered. The program that I use for cleaning up the computer is called CCleaner. This is a wonderful little program. You can download it from the company is www.piriform.com. And it basically is Windows Disk Cleanup on steroids. Among the other things it does, first of all, it's much faster. It does a more thorough job. And one of the things that Microsoft chose to implement in Disk Cleanup is that as far as browser cleanup, it only works on Internet Explorer. Now, there are a number of other alternative browsers out there, very popular browsers, including Firefox, Safari, and Google Chrome. Well, Windows Disk Cleanup doesn't even look at those, whereas CCleaner will go in and clean up all your browsers for you. So it's a more thorough program, much faster than the built-in program. And again, it's free.
Can you set it up to be able to handle when you're not using the computer, or does it affect... Even if it's running while you're doing it, does it affect how your computer works?
Well, first of all, it cannot clean up the browser when you have the browser open. So you have to close any of your browsers, Internet Explorer, Firefox, for it to run and actually do its job. So it's best run when you're not when you don't have anything else running on your computer, it'll be able to do the most thorough job then. But it only takes 10 or 15 minutes at the most to do. Again, much faster than the built-in Windows product. The other thing that will really slow down computers is what's called disk fragmentation. Think of your hard drive as a big platter, which they are. But when you start off, you have your operating system is in the inner rings of the platter. And as you write data, it takes up space. And you delete data, and it removes it off the hard drive, more or less. We'll talk about that in a minute, too. What happens, though, is as you use your computer over a period of time and you're adding and deleting files and programs, you end up with, instead of having these large, big chunks of free space, you end up with much smaller sections of free space. So then if you go to put a large file or program on your computer, it may find that it doesn't have enough continuous space to install that program. Well, that's not really a problem because the computer can keep track of, if it has to break it up into two or three or four different spots, it can keep track of all that. So you may have a file that has, you know, four or five different segments of it, and the computer doesn't care. It knows where they all are, keeps track of it. So you go to open it up. It says, oh, I see you got one there and there and there. Well, we'll just bring those all back together when we open the program. The problem is that when it has to go and retrieve all these different segments or fragments, it takes longer to open the program or to store a big file. If you're, for instance, editing photos or a movie, those are pretty big files. So if that's broken up and fragmented, it will take longer to write it back to the disk or to open the file. So what defragmenter does is it goes and looks for all the pieces of the files that are fragmented. It identifies which files are fragmented. And then it goes and collects all those pieces together, puts them all back together into one continuous file, and then will, to a greater or lesser degree, rearrange the hard drive space to optimize the available free space. Windows Defragmenter does an adequate job as far as it goes. It really doesn't get into the optimization too much, though, so it will defragment your files, but you may still have holes of varying sizes of free space scattered throughout your hard drive.
So you just get a bigger hard drive.
That's one option, but it's still going to run slower because of the fragmentation. So that's why there's an aftermarket demand for third-party defragmenters. A couple real good ones out there, both free. One is called AusLogics, AusLogics defragmenter. You can Google that. The other program is called Smart Defrag, another excellent program. Both of those offer the ability to not only defragment your files, but also to optimize the space on your hard drive. They also have some additional features that Windows Defragmenter does not include, which is the ability to work automatically when your computer is idle for any length of time. So they sit there in the background. They really don't do anything as long as you're using the computer. If you're away from the computer for 15 minutes, they kick in and start working for you. Start defragmenting. As soon as you get back on the computer, start using it. They see it and say, okay, I'm out of here. I'll wait. And
it puts itself on pause.
It puts itself on pause so it doesn't get in the way, because when a defragmenter is running, you really can't use your computer. Not only because you're going to interfere with the defragmenting process, but it's going to be running very slowly because they're very disk-intensive programs.
So that is one of the things that, as far as the maintenance of the computer, is the defragmenting and the getting rid of old programs that you're not using.
Getting rid of old programs you're not using definitely helps. It's not going to necessarily, unless the programs are taking up space when they're not, or taking up memory when they're not running. And the difference between memory and space is what you have on your hard drive. Memory is how much RAM you have in your computer. That's how much active memory you're using in your computer. Memory is volatile. In other words, when you shut your computer down, whatever's in memory goes away. Whereas on your hard drive, it doesn't.
Okay, so, but as part of the process, you should be looking at these programs and saying, oh, I'm not using that anymore, and maybe getting rid of it.
It's a good idea to uninstall things that you're not using, definitely. Mostly they just take up space they don't need to. So if you're getting low on space, that's one of the easiest ways is to uninstall programs you're not using. Always use the Windows Add and Remove or uninstall programs. Don't just delete them.
Yeah, I find that there's a lot of programs on computers that you have no idea what they're there for. I mean, you get a new computer, half the programs on the computer are there. You have no idea what, let alone how to use them, what they are. As part of when you start a new computer for a client, are you going over some of these programs with them to say, hey, this is what it does, to educate the client on what they need to do and what's available?
Yes, to a greater or lesser extent. This is welcome to the wonderful world of co-branding. The inclusion of a lot of these programs helps actually to defray the cost of the computer to the end user. So you kind of have to understand there is an economic reason for this, which actually benefits the end user. But by the same token, you get a lot of stuff, junk on a computer that you don't necessarily need, that are not critical to the operation.
Well, especially since these days the programs are so size intensive, shall we say? I mean, I don't know of a small program anymore.
Programmers have gotten very sloppy over the years. But the other thing, too, is that the cost of hard drive space has gone down so much that's usually become less of an issue on newer computers. I can remember a few years back, I want to say going back to the late 80s, I remember a local shop here had a really screaming deal on a 500 megabit, not gigabit, megabit hard drive, and it was only $5,000. Now you get 2 terabits for about 100.
And you could probably, with the rest of the money, get about 4 more computers.
Exactly. So the cost of storage has gone down so much that's the physical space that programs take up on a computer is less critical than it used to be.
Is it true that those that are actually doing the programs are, because there's so much space out there, they're not as concerned about the size of the program? They're just looking at, I want to get this to do something for me, even if it takes a little bit more time to do it because it's got a few extra lines of code or whatever it is to get it done?
I think now I'll be the first to say I'm not a programmer. I've done some programming enough to know that I don't want to be a programmer. But I believe programming has gotten a lot sloppier than it used to. When we were dealing, my first computer had a whopping 7K of RAM. And it connected to a TV and used a special data cassette recorder. When you only had 7K of RAM to deal with, you had to be pretty darn concise about your programming code. You had to reuse code. You didn't just write a new line of code if you needed to repeat a process. You referenced the original line so that you could save that space. With the amount of memory and storage available on modern computers, that's not such a critical issue. So I believe programming has gotten a little sloppy. Also, common factor seems to be among many commercial programs is program bloat. Look at the size of, for instance, Microsoft Office today.
Or even any one of the components.
When you consider that 95% of the users of Office only use 5% of the features.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
So you really have, you know, just these massive, you know, feature-laden programs that almost nobody actually uses all these features, but it's a way to create a new version of the program that everybody's got to have because they're marketed that you can't live without it.
Oh, one of the ones that I use on a regular basis, obviously, is QuickBooks. And they come out with a new version every year, and they support only 3 years worth of these QuickBooks. So right now you're locking 11, 10, and 9. Anything prior to that, they're still good programs. They will still do what most people need. They're just not supported by Intuit anymore. Although, you know, if they call me, I can help them. If they call you, you can help them with some of the issues probably that are out there. But there's no reason to upgrade every year depending on the situation. Obviously, you have to look at each situation separately, but I would say 95 times out of 100, I would say you can wait until 3 years and then get the new and improved versions with the additional upgrades and additional features, because it's not going to help you. Now, if there's a large increase, for instance, say, in the inventory portion, then I say, let's consider it. But until I see something that's going to really be of an advantage to the client, I'm not one for going out and spending money and trying to make sure that they've got the latest and greatest. I want them to have the best software available. That's what I do. That's what you do. You make sure that you've got the best that's out there so that you can best serve your clients, and that's what we do. And that's the way we approach the whole process as far as the software is concerned. Same with hardware. You want to make sure that you've got the best that's out there. The one thing that I've always wondered is you've got the PC and you've got the laptop, and a lot of times people use the laptops as their workstations. Do you find that that is worthwhile? Because then it's serving a dual purpose.
Well, it used to be that laptops, to get the same kind of processing power in a laptop, used to cost almost double what a typical PC would cost. Because this goes to the scale of manufacturing and demand, it's not that way anymore. For most business users, you can get a laptop that is comparable to a desktop for well under $1,000, let alone $600-$700. So the price differential is really, really narrowed. It might be a couple of $100 more than a comparable desktop at this point, but usually it's even less than that now. So having, you know, the price is no longer an issue, the price difference between a desktop and a laptop. The processing power, the memory, the hard drives are completely comparable in a laptop now. You can get laptops now with up to, 640 gigabit of hard drive space, so which is far beyond what most users ever will use.
Especially since you've got servers anyway that are, if you're talking about a business.
Right.
And the server is going to be where you're going to keep most of your data anyway, unless you're going to take this to a client, and then you're going to want some of the information on the laptop as well. So overall, as we come down, I want to make sure that as part of what we do, though, is I want to make sure that you kind of give people an idea of the types of things that you do and give them your contact information so that they can get a hold of you if they need to.
All right, Mitch. Well, first of all, again, my business is Nick the Computer Guy. My name is Nick Knight. I've been involved in the IT field for more than 25 years. It was an outgrowth of the audiovisual field and desktop publishing graphic design. It just kind of evolved into IT. I originally got involved with IT when I was in the audiovisual field, writing and producing audiovisual programs. I had my own audiovisual company for about 6 years in the 80s. Couldn't afford to hire someone to do my computer work, so I started teaching myself. This was about the transition at the time between DOS and Windows first started, so I've been working with Windows since the beginning. I started my own company in 2004 as a result of being outsized, downsized, resized from a major corporate entity in preparation for them selling that division. And our focus has been on providing a level of care to our clients. Basic premise is that customer service should not be an oxymoron. My goal is to treat everybody the way I want to be treated, with respect for their money, concern for their time and budget. And we endeavor to provide the highest level of service. I take time to learn my client's business, to understand how they use their technology so that I can better serve them by becoming an integral part of their company. I give them the advantage of having
part of the team.
Of having their own IT department, a virtual IT department, without the expense of having somebody on staff.
Right. And so what you're doing is you're basically going in and saying, it's not just, okay, I've got a computer problem, go in and fix it. You're taking a look at the entire company, making sure that you're being proactive in how you're handling the various things that are going on for the client so that you can be a partner in their IT portion of their business.
Exactly. And I don't work just with businesses. Businesses comprise about 80% of my client base. I also work with individuals, residential clients as well. So, but my primary focus is small business. Probably my largest client has about 15 or 20 workstations and a server.
With that many, I would think you might even have more than one server.
This depends on the needs of the individual client. A lot of things nowadays, it's more economical to outsource rather than to have internal, for instance, Exchange servers for small companies aren't necessarily cost effective when there are very good providers, third-party providers. So that's an area where many have decided to offload that part of it.
And that's why, as I said before, and as you said, that's where you work with the client to find the best solution for them. You know, I understand because one of the things as we begin to wrap up is just some of the trends that you're seeing.
Trends, yeah. There's some interesting stuff here. If you don't mind, I'm just going to get my contact information out before we get into the trends.
Right, because we only have a couple minutes left. So.
It's Nick the Computer Guy. You can email me at nick@nickthepcguy.com or just go to my website, nickthepcguy.com. My phone number is 480-242-4997. It's 480-242-4997. Getting into trends, there's some interesting things happening. The cloud, of course, is one of the most talked about parts of that. A lot of free online storage available if you look for it. One of the most popular is Windows Live SkyDrive. You can get 25 gig of free online storage there. Smartphones and tablets, probably the hottest thing going right now. The size of computing is shrinking, and what you can take with you, this is a 1 gigahertz, dual-core processor in this tablet. So you've got the processing power, amazing amount of processing power in your hand. And again, what we got into a little bit, the changing face of IT support, which is the ability to work remotely with people and help save money on their IT support costs.
Those are wonderful. And I think what we need to do is possibly come back another time because there's so much going on with computers these days, especially as the computer age is changing constantly. I have not seen anything that I buy now is so different from what I got even 6 months ago, let alone a year or 2 years ago.
Very true.
That it just makes it so difficult to keep up. But again, the most important part of this is make sure that you've got everything backed up. Storage is important. And make sure that everything else is handled. And if you need help, you contact Nick. And this is The Bottom Line with Mitch Spean, Dave Isaac. We'll be back later this week, and I will see you in a month. This is Mitch Spean with The Bottom Line, and thank you, and look forward to talking to you then.
What does your landscaping say about you? What does your landscaping...